Under the skin. Welcome to Under the Scales. The Under the Scales studios have moved to New York City briefly, and we're in the home of Steve Martosi. Perfect. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. This is so fun.
I love this. I love this place. You don't have to get that high up in New York.
You have to luck out with the buildings next to you.
Oh, okay.
You know, like it's really down. Like this is the highest building for like, you know, 10 blocks or something like that. So you get a great view.
This is really, really a lot of fun. I'm glad I came into New York today, and it happens to be like the first beautiful day in a while.
I know.
Steve is an incredible fish fan, and I'm glad you guys are going to be meeting him because you might know him directly and or indirectly. He knows a lot of the people I know, but we really haven't gotten to know each other until just kind of a couple months ago. But he's really a big tech founder of, well, why don't you tell your biggest one that the fish community would know about?
Sure. I mean, my co-founder, Jared Hecht, and I started a company called GroupMe, which was a group text messaging app made entirely to go to fish and Disco Biscuits concerts.
So GroupMe, from what little I know about it, although my daughter could probably tell you a lot about
it.
Nice. Because she uses it. All her Fordham swimming team used it, and maybe other swimmers, maybe that's how they connect or something. But the way I get it, wasn't it sort of an early way of like gathering people together to text, like in a particular group?
We were at the point where the iPhone had come out, but there wasn't even group texting on the iPhone. There was no way to really stay in touch, and with a group at least. And Jared's girlfriend, now wife, was complaining to him about, you know, email chains, and she hates email chains. They'll plan for an event, it'll get annoying, and then you'll go to the show and you can't even stay in touch when you get there. And you know, he calls me up one day, he's like, how do we fix this? And I was like, I got an idea. And and in 24 hours at a hackathon, TechCrunch hackathon.
So you were a programmer?
I'm a programmer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, although I don't write much code now. In fact, if I write code now, I get in trouble by my team, so I have to like CEO things now. But But yeah, programmer, and in 24 hours, we built a very simple group text messaging app that solved our problem.
And not to give away the punchline too early, but I mean, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. Why don't you just, do you mind fast-forwarding to the end? It has a wonderful story.
It has a wonderful story. We sold the company to Skype in only 13 months, very successful, very happy exit. And it was a absolute roller coaster with incredible people along the way. We had some fun with fish references throughout the whole journey, and you know, it really changed our lives.
It couldn't have gone better.
It is still, by the way, a like top 100 app in the App Store. I think it's got something like 50 million users at this point. And Jared and I haven't been involved in 5 years, so Microsoft kind of owns it now.
When was the Skype purchase?
2011.
2011, and it's still in the top 100.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So that shows some staying power for
college kids or like heavily users.
Like I said, my daughter graduated just last year, so she uses it heavily.
I have a younger half brother and sister, and you know, in the beginning, they're like, "Oh, cool, you made an app." Like they didn't really get it, and now that they're in college, the older ones in college, they're like, "I use GroupMe every day."
That's amazing.
So it was really fun, yeah.
That is great. That's kind of like probably how I feel when I hear that someone, you know, a distant relative, listened to Bouncing Around the Room.
That's the one they always know. They always know that one.
They know that one. And for a while there, it was kind of like college radio played
heavy things. Yeah.
And I guess
my dad was always like, oh, they're playing that fish one. Yeah, you knew Heavy Things for sure.
Yep. And then my mom even at 82 was in the dentist chair, and the dentist was playing Alive Again.
Quietly you say to me, the time has come for you to be alive again. I saw you say and turn away, and you must wait another day outside again.
That made it on the radio too.
Yeah.
I remember going to see a movie when that album first came out, which I loved that album. And it was like the song was on before the movie played.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, look at that, Trey is on. This is great.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see fish out in the like real world, it's like such a exhilaratingly cool thing.
Well, right? Now there's tons and tons of
the Tweezer reprise, like yeah. in the Super Bowl, that right? Was like, that was so cool.
That was amazing. And also now, you know, there's a woman on, I guess it's NBC. I want to say Katie Turr.
Okay.
And she weaves in.
I heard about very this. Like my friend gets yes, dropped and that
exactly.
kind of stuff. Yeah.
She'll like blatantly put it in. Whereas before my friend, was it Dan Greenhouse, I believe,
on yeah.
CNBC Financial News would all of a sudden be able to put in a backwards down the number line or something.
That's great.
But that's like, that's so, that to me is riskier.
We snuck it in. Like the GroupMe, we snuck in a Disco Biscuits reference as the name of a company for GroupMe. So if you went to the App Store, it was Mindless Dribble Inc., which is one of their song names. And like between that and fish references, like we did this thing at South by Southwest where we opened a grilled cheese stand in the middle of downtown South by Southwest and gave out free grilled cheese if you had the app installed. And the grilled cheese had our logo branded on it. Huh. And this was completely Jared's idea out of you know, just the reference to Fish Lot.
So you're a New York entrepreneur. You're sure. now CEO of, are you still GroupMe or are you totally out
no,
of
GroupMe? So we left GroupMe in 2 years after the acquisition, so maybe 2013. And at that point started a company really focused on bringing the tools and kind of collaborative nature of the programming industry to the music world. And so it's called Splice.
Yes.
It's actually inspired partially from a conversation I had with John from the Disco Biscuits backstage before Camp Bisco. He got into programming after GroupMe was successful.
Oh, nice.
And was like, where is GitHub for Ableton? And that's like what every programmer who's into music's dream is. It's a collaboration suite that we use to build software and apply to the music world because, you know, music yeah. is... Music creation is like, you know this in podcasting land, like pretty old,
yeah.
you know, like big, heavy desktop software, yes. hard to use.
Yes. Well, Trey and I, you know, we go way back into early multi-tracking and it's kind of always been a dream as soon as the internet became a thing to remotely collaborate. Mm-hmm. And now we do it, I guess, a lot of the time we basically just send MP3s. So in other words, we're not sending the multi-track file.
Right.
So I couldn't go in there and turn down the drums, for
right.
example.
Right.
Whereas with Splice,
yeah.
you could.
Yeah.
And I really like Splice because you're working in the cloud. I just want to say, me and simultaneously a guy named Speech from the 90s band Arrested Development got hired for an Atlanta company, and we were looking at a cloud music multi-tracking solution, and we briefly looked at Splice.
Nice.
And yeah, I don't think either we or it was quite ready for exactly what we wanted, but we were about to reach out. That would have been funny had we reached out to
Yeah,
you.
I mean, we were early, right? And like now the platform has really had a chance to mature in the last 2 years, and it's more of a broader suite of services for artists now. We call ourselves the creative hub for the modern musician.
Mm.
And the thing that they're loving the most is this this library called Splice Sounds, which is 2 million, you know, samples and loops that you can use royalty free.
I want to go in and make loops.
I will pay you to make loops. We're commissioning lots of content now. We're paying $1 million a quarter out to artists. We are commissioning tons of original
that
content.
That sounds about my price. That's
We're just going to have Tom Marshall samples from here on out.
That's kind of what a coincidence.
Yeah.
that's amazing. Well, we've gotten a little, you know, a little entrepreneurial, a little techie, yeah. and I'd like to rewind a tiny bit to how you got into fish.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's a Disco Biscuits component there. Sometimes
yeah.
the two...
Some of your guests, too. Yeah.
yeah. sometimes you think that there's like a... to me, I find it a healthy competition among fans to say, oh, every other band sucks, but Fish, or you know, or the Disco Biscuits fans might say, yeah, I don't like Fish, I love the Biscuits. Is that really a thing anymore?
Maybe for them, but for me, I have a healthy obsession with two bands.
Right.
right? You know, like I have like 120-ish Fish shows under the belt, I think,
right.
and 230 Biscuit shows, so I'm yeah. not in your 300 club. Maybe if you combine them, I'd be in your 300 club. But
oh,
yeah.
I'm so glad you worked that in, because I have to work that into every podcast. I don't know why.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, there's a milestone there. Mine just is spread across two bands.
Yeah. Well, I think like if everything goes super well and we're doing this podcast 10 years later and Fish is still playing, that the 300 club will have to graduate to the 400
club. Oof, man, give me a chance for a minute. I got these Baker Dozen shows that I can like start racking up the stats in New York.
Right, but, you know, yeah, that's right. You live in New York, so yeah. I'm hoping your stats increase by 13.
There's a very decent chance.
Cool, so you grew up with Disco Biscuits and...
Fish First.
Oh, Fish First.
Fish First, yeah, for sure. So I got into Fish. I remember... I think I got Hoist first and like liked it, but didn't like get crazy. And then somehow at a ninth grade dance, they played Caverin, and I was like, "This song is awesome. What is this?" And I was like, "That's Fish." And then I went deeper on it.
Your time is near. The mission's clear. It's later than we think. Before you slip into the night, you'll want something to drink. Steal away before the dawn and bring us back good news. Tread in primal soup. Please wipe it from your shoe. She's in a purple pirate school. It's the evening with his cry. Sanctuary.
Nice. And I think it was my 10th grade. My first shows, which I think is about as strong of an opening as you can get, was 12/29/97, 12/30/97. Then my mom would not let me go to New Year's, and I got 4/2/4/3/98 after that. So it was a good start.
Those are great shows.
Well, so I had a little run there of, you know, liking them, seeing them a bit in college. I held my mom hostage on the SATs. I said, "Mom, there was a show the night before the SATs, which I think you may have sat in at." And
was that?
It was Nassau Coliseum, like 10/8 or 10/9.
Tommy.
Was it Tommy?
Yeah. So Tommy was interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'll just tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So we should probably play some of that too. Often will sort of come up, or the band, I'm not sure who comes up with it sometimes, but this one, Trey let me know kind of day of that, "Hey, we really want you to sing the song Tommy, because you're Tommy. Do you want to do it?" And I was absolutely yes. But I was kind of petrified for a couple of reasons. I didn't really know if I knew the song. And so I did the thing where, you know, I saw the first set, and then Trey had said that it's going to be right at the end or even maybe encore. So I knew I had the entire second set. So I was kind of chilling backstage and experimenting with what to wear. I had this weird flowy white pants I got from somewhere, and they remarkably fit me. So I put those on, and I had bare feet because I was changing into those pants. And I hadn't done anything to my top. I had someone running around looking for maybe a leather jacket or something. And then all of a sudden, Brad came in, panicked. "Tom, you're on. Trey's playing, like, he's about to kick you off. They've been going around and around with, you know, the beginning of the song waiting for you." I'm like, "What?" And so I ran out there, and, you know, that's possibly the reason, if anyone noticed, I was, like, A, barefoot, B, wearing, you know, maybe attire on my lower half that was appropriate for the song, but not on my upper half. I just had some stupid automotive t-shirt.
I gotta see the picture of that.
Yeah. And then, so I sang it, though. Luckily, I had rehearsed, you know, I at least prioritized the rehearsal, and was able to sing pretty well. And I got into character, and I was kind of jumping around in the front of the stage and was doing okay with it until the see me, feel me part.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, well, now I gotta get the audience to feel me and put my foot, my bare foot out into the crowd, kind of over that, you know, gap in front of the stage. And a kid who has since apologized a couple times grabbed my foot and pulled.
No way.
Like, what the hell were you thinking?
He grabbed your bare foot, too. You had no sock on at this point. Yeah, wow.
Right, so apart from being a hygienic error on his part, it was like a life or death error on my part, you know. Luckily, I was able to kind of maintain a little balance and wrench it away before But I was about to go in.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, I was right teetering at the edge of the stage. And I looked at him like, what the fuck? And I think he knew he had done wrong because he's since found me. And even recently, again, for a second apology. So whoever you are, yes, I registered both the apologies and you're forgiven now. And yet it's still a funny story.
That's great. I love that.
So
I said, Mom, I'm going to fail the SATs unless I go to this fish show.
Like, meaning you were going to fail them.
I was going to flunk them. Yeah.
That's a threat that doesn't work to parents usually.
It worked.
It worked because even parents know that you don't want to go through a 3-hour test.
Yeah, I mean, my mom's got a lot of, she's been really, she encourages me in a lot of the things I do. And I'll tell you, like, I think if I had, she allowed me to go across country. I don't know if she had to, needed to allow me back in college to do, like, I did all summer 2003 tour. And, she really was like, you're going to see the country. You're going to be great. And, like, you know, I kept myself out of trouble and had a great time and got to see the country and meet great people. And,
nice. Nice. Well, yeah. had we known at the time your connection to fish, we could have helped you with the SAT score. I don't know if you know Trey's dad ran ETS.
I did not know that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
yeah. He was the president for Ernie Sr. is the president for quite a while of Educational Testing Service.
Nice. Well, I did okay. I got into college. I went to Carnegie Mellon. It worked out. So
we share that in common then. I was there 1 year.
Okay, cool.
I went to Carnegie Mellon. And then, luckily, I did not know
that, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went 1 year and I was an engineering school candidate and very quickly realized, you know what? Computer science is going to be a little bit easier for me and it's kind of a little bit more of my thing. Although I had some amazing robotics seminars that really kind of, it was really cool. They were sort of big at the time in robotics.
I like that you thought computer science was going to be the easy path. I went to like information systems because I knew I couldn't work hard enough to do the computer science program. Carnegie Mellon's computer science program is really, really hard.
It was stringent. It was tough. And, and then the way this story unfolds will prove that. It was a little bit too challenging for me, I believe. And also at the time I fell in with a happy bunch of folks who didn't treat, class as importantly as they taught partying.
And I sort of hanging out with me.
Yeah. And so I sort of fell in with that crowd. I'm not going to blame the crowd. It was totally my situation. But Carnegie Mellon, let's put it this way. They suggested maybe I take a year off.
Mm.
And the same time, fortune smiled upon me in musically because the same thing was happening to Trey at University of Vermont. For different reasons, he got kicked out, I got you might want to take a year off kind of thing. That's when both our dads said, you guys go to Mercer County Community College, which was our community college.
Cool.
And that's where we kind of rehooked up again.
It set the path. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't have been able to do a lot of the music that I did if I hadn't done information systems. And for me, class is really hard. My attention span sitting through a class is not there. I like to create. I like to do things. I have to learn at my own speed. College was a bit of a struggle until I had a minimum. I had to maintain a B minus, and I just did what I could to maintain the B minus. But then I spent the rest of the time exploring the things that I was passionate about. I was writing code. I was building my own apps. I was seeing a lot of fish shows I wasn't just doing nothing, structured stuff. It took me until I think my junior, senior year till I got really more motivated because I was doing the computer stuff that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
As building software, which I have a real, I say that code is my canvas.
Right.
And it's the one thing where I feel like I can actually think of something and then create it.
Right.
And that has expanded into software companies. But for me, I pick up a guitar, I try, but it's I'm fighting something. I'm fighting something that inherently,
right.
that I, even no matter how much I love, I just can't get, my rhythm is off a bit. It's just not clicking the way it needs to.
Right.
And, but software really was the thing that felt like it flowed for me.
And like so many musicians, math and computers and software seem to attract the same type of brain.
Mm.
There's been plenty written about the link between math and music.
Yeah, and that's why, any computer programmer that likes music knows that, the splice world needed to exist. Because if you love that art and you know how the world has changed from open source, collaboration, just people working together, music was just so far behind. So
amazing. So at at Carnegie Mellon, were you able to break away? And is that kind of where you became a Big Fish fan, or was it post-college?
Well, you know, you had that window of time where I saw like maybe 19, 20 shows before the hiatus. And then there was this year that I couldn't tour because it didn't exist.
Yes.
And then after they came back, it was like, all right, I got to go to as many shows as I can.
Right.
Which was harder while you're in school, but you were freer to do it. So I did all of summer 2003, which was great.
Right. And they had announced at this point that they were quitting, or not quite yet?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
Not quite yet.
Okay.
So I remember, I have a funny story involving you, actually.
Oh, yeah?
So, you know, I was always kind of a little rogue or hacker or tinkerer over the years. And back in the day, I had this cool printer that I was able to make these, I was able to make really good fish tickets.
You know,
I got like 19 friends onto the floor at Nassau Coliseum.
So to me, I understand that tickets, it's
free
not so
barcode.
Much, so it's not so, okay, the barcode, that's one thing. But it's also not so much the tickets, it's like the paper too.
I know, I had this printer, man. I could do blacklight, I could do all hologram,
oh
I could
gosh.
Do like all this thing. And until the barcodes came out, that was...
Wasn't there some wacky test, like you'd rip the ticket
and you test.
Burn it?
Yeah. They don't really do that. The ticket's good enough that the person taking your tickets...
They're not going to do the
ticket.
Burn test.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like when you get taken to the back room, like at the casino.
Right.
There's a guy with a hammer, and he'll do the burn test. But so you didn't get to that point.
No, so, you know, I thought I was far enough along. But, like, whatever. I had a little fun doing that stuff in college, in high school. And then there was this, you know, 20th anniversary run, and... I remember, I don't know what inspired me to do it, but I walked by the water wheel table and I would see the like guy standing there with his all access pass, and I would just kind of study it. There was no like, I don't think I had a camera phone or anything at the time, but I would study it. Yeah, and then I would go home and use that printer, and I made a laminate. And it was a pretty simple, it was like a Stanley Cup with like red and blue lettering. It was like probably the simplest one that's ever been done. And then I remember debuting it just for myself at the 20th anniversary show, and I was like standing on the side of the stage next to you.
Really? Yeah. So now a laminate, did you like was your purpose to go get free beer backstage, or was it to get a better viewing angle, or just to see if you could do it?
It was to explore.
Okay.
You know, it was really, I had no idea.
But
right?
Did you like, what? So what was the biggest access that you got apart from watching the side stage?
So weird things that happened is I walked all the way up to like nearly front row, and then someone had a seizure and everyone looked around being like, oh, you need to help them. You're like the guy. And I was like, oh crap. And I immediately ran and got a security guard and was like, you need to handle this, and then just got out of there. That was not going to end well.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I just wanted, I didn't want to cause any harm. I didn't want to do anything weird. I just kind of wanted to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And it was just me.
That's kind of what the hacker mentality, right?
A little bit.
To see if you can do it.
Yeah. And I didn't tell, I don't think I told anyone at the time
right.
either, because I didn't want it to become a thing.
Well, back then, I mean, the only reason I ask is because back then, the fish backstage was a significant...
There were people back there.
It was a goal.
Yeah.
And people wanted to get there.
I did get free beer.
Okay.
I did, yeah. I got free beer. I stood on the side of the stage.
Right. That's changed.
It has definitely changed.
I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I know. Okay. That's what I hear.
Yeah, you know. 2009 onwards, there literally is no backstage.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I'm glad I got in while it was there. I got a little... like, when they did announce that they were breaking up, though, I was like, okay, well, what's the harm? Like, I can make a couple of these for our friends. It's the last, like, five shows of the forever or something.
Right.
And and that's when things got, like, a little out of control.
That's when you not only printed tickets, you printed laminates and...
Yeah, and then, like, we would end up in the wrong place, you know? Like, we really weren't supposed to be where we were. Like, I'd been standing next to Trey's guitars, and it was, like, not okay, right?
Right.
Like, and, like, we knew we were in the wrong place.
Right.
But we did it for a couple shows, and then eventually started getting caught. And I think they held one of my friends during like an Alpine Valley show.
Whoa.
For like a couple hours being like, tell us where these are coming from.
Oh.
And the line was just $150 in the parking lot. And like, you
I
know,
see, right, right.
Yeah, but there's only like four or five people.
Don't let them know they're getting close to the source.
Yeah.
Little, you know, now the Fish Inc. guys are listening to it. And
never.
I'm actually obliged to arrest you. I'm sorry.
you're banned from Fish for life. Damn it. I'm going to start wearing disguises. Yeah.
He's a hacker, so he'll get in anyway. Nothing we can do, guys.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to put more of a wall up. You'd rather just have me on your side.
Right. We have enough to deal with Russia.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Domestic hackers. That's a whole different.
I can play some defense. You know.
Yeah. Please do.
But like the cool thing about all that is that, you know, Fish was this incredible passion, and like, luckily they broke up. Like honestly, if Coventry hadn't happened, I don't know what I would have done. I was like on tour. right?
Yeah.
And like, that was right as I graduated college.
I know so many people, and I think it's like a demo that's slightly older than you are, probably just that right when they broke up, took the opportunity to kind of focus a little bit more on careers, but also a lot of them got married.
Oh, wow.
And had kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was pretty intense. There's like a lot of my friends, you know, younger friends, fall into that category. I know I've got more than a decade on you, but I'm talking people that I just have roughly 10 years on.
Well, some had got kids. I got a job,
you
know, like, and that was great. But yeah, the passion for music, though, just like never disappeared. And like, I really got into the Disco Biscuits very heavily during that time. Saw a ton of shows with them. And then it got weird with them when the drummer changed. And it was like, come on, guys. Like, stay together. Right. You know, it was a weird time.
All bands have to have some problems.
Yeah,
right?
It was like dark ages, you know. And but what was cool is that, you know, the programming and Fish and the passion really always worked together really well. I mean, I had done one startup myself that failed, but I learned a lot. And more to that story. But
I like that story too. If you don't mind, you can sort of gloss over what you know, any details you don't want to tell. But the cool thing about successes is that there's often a lot of failures represented in the one success.
Yeah, I mean, so going into the like life lesson from that is that timing and luck is nearly a third of being successful in startup land, or maybe anything, right?
Wow.
So for me, it was, I started a company. It was called Simpact Technologies, and in the beginning, it was it was when MySpace was big and Facebook wasn't, and it was big on, you could only put images on MySpace, not like videos and all this stuff. So I made this like digital version of the Lance Armstrong bracelet, where I created this technology that would render an image on the fly whenever you would hit the web page. And so like it would actually composite the image with data that, like in real time. And it turns out that was super valuable for email marketing, because you could change email after it was sent. And you could change it so that the email would change when you opened it.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out that, like, you know, I was unsuccessful with it. I lost a bunch of my parents' money. But
it seems like that's something you see now, and that's kind of ubiquitous.
So this is the funny thing, is like I had a couple friends of mine. So the story doesn't end terribly.
Right.
So a couple years later, some friends of mine were like, we want to go do that idea of yours from a couple years back. And I'm an advisor in the company, and then it's like a $200 million company now.
There you go. That's
so
awesome.
Timing and luck, you know, is like big... Incredible. I was early both in my career, and the industry hadn't caught up to where you were going. And then GroupMe is really the opposite. We just hit it right at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
Timing, so to me, like, luck doesn't give anyone a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
So I think, like Oprah said, and Trey says it to me all the time, like I said, isn't it amazingly lucky that we wrote that song? Like, had we decided to watch TV instead? And Trey says there's no luck, and it's an Oprah line. It's like, you know, luck is opportunity meets preparation, right? Mm. And we always have this thing, like in Brian and Robert, the line, longing for your TV seat.
Yeah.
You slip past strangers in the street. There's no one that you'd care to meet. Longing for your TV seat. This one is for you. If you're just staring at your walls. If you're just staring at your walls.
Yeah, and it's like when Trey and I get together to write, there are songs that would not exist if we said, let's put on the, you know, Stanley Cup, or let's put on, you know what I mean? And so we work our asses off. And I think that's what you did. And I think you were prepared, and for the entrepreneurs out there that are, you know, that have an idea, I think timing more than luck might be, at least to stay hopeful.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. And I will tell you this, you know, you guys working really hard to stay off the seat outputs content that gets me motivated to get off my seat. You know, like in between...
We're paying it forward, kind of.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Well, and I appreciate that.
In between Simpact and GroupMe, I built my friend Dan Berkowitz, who you guys probably know from CID Entertainment.
Yeah, consider it Dan.
Yeah, consider it Dan. He had just gotten started working with The Dead, and he was like, yo, dude, The Dead, their ticket request system is like fax forms. you know, like, this is ridiculous. Like, can you solve this? And I was like, yeah.
I mean, it had just gotten out of the mail, but its big step forward was fax.
They were literally fax. It was more for like the, you know, they don't have a guest list. They make everyone buy their tickets. It's kind of like, you know, the fish purchasing thing. And they literally would have to fax their orders in. And he was like, can you fix this? And I built an app called Bandwidth that we used, and we ran the whole internal ticketing for the 09 Dead tour. And like, it was on a roll, man. It was getting like, String Cheese was starting to use it. Other people were getting into it. The ticketing is really powerful.
Ticketing is so difficult to break into just because of the lock that the big people have on
it. Yeah, we can only do the internal stuff. Yeah.
I see.
But we had a great time working together. And unfortunately, we had to shut that down when GroupMe got successful, because I'm only good at doing all my focus on one thing at a time is really helpful. Dan still talks about the power of that system. And I brought it back online for him just so he could use it as a guide to build something new. So it might actually be up there.
That's really cool. Ticketing is something that, you know, I don't feel the technology has solved yet.
Mm. I can actually talk about this for a second. So when Fish was coming back from breaking up, we needed to get tickets, right? And so I remember a few weeks before, I had a thesis that I could write something to get us Fish tickets. And I hadn't really worked on it, but I was like, I think I can get us Ticketmaster tickets.
You mean apart from plugging in your ticket printing printer?
Yeah, no, not no, real tickets. Okay. Real, not messing with the printer. The barcodes are out. My game is over.
Okay,
you know?
Got it.
And you know, I remember a buddy of mine being like, we were at a party on like a Wednesday, and the tickets were going on sale maybe like a couple days later. And he's like, you need to leave right now and go work on that. So I wrote this little script, and all it did was give you a, you know, refresh the page in a way and fill in the boxes faster to give you like a half a second advantage. Like, just a small little advantage. You know, it's not like trying to steal tons of tickets.
You were the first bot, kind of.
I don't know.
You were the first ticket master bot.
You know, yeah. But we actually got 27 of us together, and we went over the Relics office, and because we needed somewhere with good internet. And I set everyone up. They had no idea what was going on. I was like, guys, it was so funny. I set up all these computers and like had a countdown clock. And I'm like, all right, everybody, like in 10 seconds, you're going to press this button and do this thing. And everybody did it. And we got 27 tickets.
Wow.
One for everybody.
And that was pre-CAPTCHA?
CAPTCHA was there.
So you had that?
No. So it didn't give you, it wasn't hacking. It wasn't a bot all the way through. It just gave you a half a second advantage to get you to the CAPTCHA.
Okay, gotcha.
So you like press this thing, and then your hands were waiting there,
okay.
And the CAPTCHA would come up, and then you'd go.
You type the CAPTCHA, and then you're ready to go.
You're in.
I see. That's amazing.
And we got, you know, so like those tickets.
To me, I don't think that would be illegal technically.
We didn't take it all the way to the end. We didn't check out and buy the tickets.
Right.
But you know, that those 27 tickets went to fans. Those went to the hardcore Fish fans.
Right.
And so like, that's the thing when you're distributing the scarce asset, you know, you got to make sure.
Yeah.
And then some people, if you're going to charge them money, I'd rather that money goes to charity or to the band directly.
The solutions that I've been part of sucked, where Bruce Springsteen did like an anti-scalper thing, and it involved bracelets and a really fucked up line where you had to show your ID and all kinds of stuff and even get walked in.
Yep.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's one of the things we were really going to work on with Bandwidth. We were going to make it so that people could get their own allotments and then be able to distribute those across. The system was cool.
Yeah.
But to be honest, once GroupMe took off, I had to shut everything down.
Well, I'm voting for you to bring it back and solve the ticket problem.
Yeah. So I'd love to at some point.
Okay good.
So when Fish came back, it was another little Tom Marshall fun there, is they came back on my birthday. And to me, it was like, oh, they had this birthday song. It felt very like...
backwards down the number line.
It felt very welcoming. It was a beautiful day, you know? Yeah. I really loved that return.
It's a birthday song for sure.
Yeah.
Communication had been sort of limited to him. And once I finally kind of was able to get access to Trey again, that was the first thing that we did was we communicated musically. Mm-hmm. And so it really kind of had a lot of significance.
I mean, just try to think about what was going on in his head as he was receiving those communications and like,
well, the kind
art
of
that he loves
it,
coming through.
Yes. Oh. It harkened back to a way that we used to work. And this is back in the NICU days and Silent in the Morning days, where I would send lyrics to him or even leave them on the phone.
Mm.
And he would reply with a song on the answering machine within... often within minutes.
So cool.
And that's what this was, where I had sent the lyrics, finally gotten like an email, a valid email address.
Yeah.
For Trey, wow. Which was also weird at the time because he wasn't an emailer.
Right.
Until right then.
Right.
And his dad goes, "Hey man, try this. Give it a try. I think Trey will respond."
This email
to
thing.
Yeah, yeah, this email thing for Trey in 2009 was new.
Wow.
2008, I guess it was. And sure enough, he responded the same way by sending me the first backwards down the number line. I'm gonna play you a little bit of that right now.
Every time my birthday comes. Call your friend and sing a song. I whisper it into his ear. But write it down, just don't miss a year. You decide what it contains, how long it goes, but this remains. The only rule is it begins. Happy, happy, oh my friend. You decide what it contains, how long it goes, but this remains. Happy, happy, you decide what it contains, how long it goes, what this remains. The only rule is it begins. Happy, happy.
How'd you like that?
That's great. It's so good. It's really, I mean, just like honestly, like I get to interact with a lot of artists now, and you know, watching your ability to be part of the process. I think one of the things, to be honest, that's been hard for me in Fishland, and one of the things that's interesting to me about Fish, is that the community around it wants badly to collaborate. You know, they make these jokes, they make these merch, they make really good merch, you know? Like, I really want Fish and these bands to figure out how to do, like, fan merch right, because, like, man, some of that stuff is just too good. Like, I remember my buddy Robbie did this Lenny and Carl from The Simpsons, My Friend shirt, when one of them had a knife, and it was like, it's so good, you know? Like, I want that stuff to flourish, because I love collaboration, and it's really important to me. And one of the things that really drew me to the Biscuits was that I got to be friends with them, and I got really close. And then, you know, I got to do things like write set lists with them.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I'll tell you, one of the things in Fishland, too, that's always hard to hear, and it was talked about on your podcast even, about the set list writing process. It's like, man, when you write set lists when I would write Disco Biscuit set lists with Mark, like, it's a process. It's hard. But you really think about the fans. You're thinking about, and their stuff's crazy. You know, you're jamming at the end of a song. You're playing a song from the other night. You're like, you're doing some stuff that I'd love to see Fish do someday.
Well, set list is a bad example simply because of what everyone who listens to my podcast already knows, is that Trey kind of brings no set list onto the stage.
Just open with punch.
But let's talk about like the art, you know, and I interviewed Fan Art Pete. Yeah. I love the art collaboration with the community.
But like Jen's Fish Art is very like, you know, our friend Jen.
Yeah, we have a friend Jen with a wonderful donut piece.
Yeah, and like there's no real fish stuff in that, right?
It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Well, that's it. So that's kind of collaborating with the band.
And I do this a lot in music, trying to give people rights to use each other's music, right?
Right.
So I do a lot of royalty-free stuff. So it'd be interesting if Fish was able to publish a bunch of like, this art you can do royalty-free. You can make what you want and pay this fee or something like that up front. But like, there's all these different models that I think there could be a great model, because the Fish community is beautiful, right?
Like, the Creative Commons copyright kind of allowed for photographs to flourish. Like, you can use photographs on your webpage that maybe our friend Andrea Nusinoff might take. Mm-hmm. You can use it on your webpage, but you can't use it for anything where you might make money without then, you know, activating another clause in the copyright. But yeah, you're right. Things have gotten friendlier in a way. But musicians, songwriters, and I know personally, from personal experience, but also like you're saying, artists do need a different way to monetize their art. And I like how you and I were talking about off mic and a little bit on mic, how you have loop libraries, and so that's allowing an artist who in the old days their access to money was to create a song. Mm-hmm. Now you can create a part of a song that someone else uses and get, you know, reimbursed.
I have a guy who was able to quit his job because of the snare drums he's made.
That's phenomenal.
You know, like,
so you're talking snare loops.
Yeah, well, no, literally, you know, a hit on a table. I'll actually give you the sound so you can play it.
Okay.
But it's this, he has a bunch of bamboo snares that are now all over the radio, all over, like, you know, one day Deadmau5 releases a track online and everyone's like, wait, that's Crane's bamboo snare. And like, yeah, and Crane was a snare drum guy. He has a pack on Splice. So a little bit about Splice in this, the Splice sounds, the samples and loops. It's kind of like Spotify. For like $7.99 a month, you can browse 2 million samples and loops, and you can download 100 of them a month. And we pay out to artists who are sound creators, paying out like $1 million a quarter right now. And it's really cool. We have artists making packs, and you know.
That is incredible.
It's cool. And like, you know, I've guys from the Biscuits making packs, like Aaron's going to do one now.
It's fantastic. And, I remember a long time ago, like back when like Acid was the looping product out there, you know, buying a drum CD that Mick Fleetwood put together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like that.
And I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Except it was $49 at the time.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like what happens because of that is 99% of this industry goes to piracy.
Yes.
And so with the model that we're doing, it's changing the game. But, you know, it's fun to be, like, this is the thing. I think it's for you. You found an incredible spot to be a collaborator of the thing that you love, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, for me, I've always just been searching for what I can collaborate on. And, you know, the Biscuits have been the kind of, the thing that draws me back a lot is not just my love for the music, which it is the fact that I get to collaborate. I mean, I was on stage as a blues brother with them over the New Year's before this one, yeah.
And so like, you're family with them.
Yeah, I mean, we did a whole song and dance routine. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. So that's not something available to every fan.
No, but they're, you know, I think that all bands need to figure out how to collaborate with their biggest fans.
I love them. I mean, oh, yeah, right.
You know, this is a way, these people are so creative and so much passion for what you do.
Yeah.
You got to turn them into not just one ticket, but you got to turn them into like hundreds of tickets.
I like that. There's like the top 10% model, you know, where somehow the fans that give back the most get recognized. Yeah, that's kind of, I've seen that kind of thing talked about as well. I do like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if you're like online pushing fish and you're, you know, buying t-shirts, all these should sort of contribute to your profile.
The average fish fan must be responsible for like at least 1.5 more fish fans coming in, right? Like, this is how I would think about users on a platform. Like, you know, with GroupMe, the cool thing is one user would give us six more.
Wow.
You know, or I think it was because you would start a group with six people, average group size of six people. So like it was viral.
And that brings the cost of customer acquisition, which is the huge
one.
Thing.
Yeah.
That brings it way down.
Right. And think about that, you know, how bands are modeled in the same way. Thing that I've been struggling as more of a product guy has been the fact that Splice is growing a lot. You know, GroupMe was 13 months, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, now I'm going through the fact that we went from this idea and this product, and now we've got this business that's working.
Right.
And now I've got to build a company.
Ah.
Which is like, you know, we're up to 30 people now.
Oh,
but,
that's fantastic.
You know,
I just met two of them, right?
You did? Yeah. We're doing a meeting here.
Yeah.
You know, now we're talking about scaling big because I think that we're giving so much back to music and there's so much more to do that it's fun.
I love it. I love it, Steve. And I know you and I could talk forever because you hit me right on my two biggest interests. And of course, one is music and the other is technology and startups. And Steve is a guy, I'm now talking to the audience, not Steve, is a guy who kind of was, I don't want to say lucky, I want to say in the right place at the right time and was prepared and found opportunity more than once. And there's even a third company. I don't know if you want to talk about it. It's an incredible company.
Yeah, totally.
Go ahead, let's talk.
So there's one other company called Blade, which is, you know, easily described as an Uber for helicopters. Although I don't know if I'm supposed to use that, but it's just the easiest.
It's so funny. It's like one of those overused terms where, you know, I'm sure our friends in venture capital have people that give their presentation, they probably start it with, I've just created the Uber of healthcare.
Totally.
I've just created the Uber of, I don't know, you name it.
Yeah.
But you literally are the Uber for helicopter flight.
It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Except the only thing, difference being that, you know, they don't come to your corner.
You have to go over the West Side Highway. Yeah, you can't. They won't come to your house, unfortunately.
But now, how does that scale? Are you gonna like? Can I catch eventually a helicopter near my home in Princeton, New Jersey?
I think that we're figuring out how to scale now. We just opened LA. We're doing charter stuff, and we had some stuff going on around the music festival there.
And is it for the 1%, or is it for?
It's an interesting question. I mean, we've made so many more people able to fly than ever has before. I mean, like helicopter flight was like a 0.1% luxury for a long time. And like, honestly, my co-founder started it, or his inspiration was he was once flying out to, I think, Sag Harbor on a helicopter seaplane. And him and his friend both got into like helicopters next to each other and then landed next to each other. And it was like, this is ridiculous, you know?
Right.
Help, you know, really helped Rob, you know, his vision on this one and built the app. I named it, which was really fun.
And Blade is a great name.
Yeah, we built this great brand around it. And Rob has took over as CEO and really ran it. I sit on the board now.
Okay.
And I'm not really a Hamptons guy.
Right.
So, you know.
And that's kind of what it was designed for, right?
Yeah, that's how it started.
Is flying back and forth to long. Yeah.
I got one special experience out of it where, you know, Rob was like, you know, you should do something cool with this Blade thing. You never go out to the Hamptons. And so I got a couple of friends together and we went up to Magna Ball and had a one-day event at Magna Ball, landed there, saw all the sets, and was in bed by 3 a.m., which was...
That is amazing.
It was really one of the... Like, in terms of a musical day,
yeah,
like, that was up there. So
from New York City...
And the show was amazing.
The entire Magna Ball show.
Tweezer Caspian, like, this is so good. The drive-in set was cool.
Let's play some of that right now. We got enough music in here. I think we got a really great podcast episode, Steve, and thank you so much for being on Under the Scales.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. And see you soon, and I'll see you at the next at the Baker's Dozen.
13 in a row.
All right, take it easy.
Thanks.